This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Ray Gensinger. Dr. Gensinger is the Chief Information Officer at HSHS, a great health system. We're in the Midwest here, so we see HSHS a lot. He'll talk today about priorities, about enterprise programs versus applications, what works in systems, and a little bit more. Dr. Gensinger, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks a lot, Scott. I appreciate it. As you said, I am a physician, which kind of puts me in a little bit of a unique role as also serving as a chief information officer. But I have been kind of on a long journey that has always involved and intersected between technology and healthcare. So I essentially went from being a fairly tech-savvy physician to now being a healthcare-savvy technologist.
And talk to us about, Dr. Gensinger, about that journey. At what point did you start sort of like, you see certain, what specialty were you in? Were you primary care? Were you a specialist? What were you doing as a physician?
Yep. My training, I started out as an internist. So I trained here, actually, here in Springfield, where I currently work, and was actually part of the medical school for a number of years before I started transitioning.
And so what happened, you see internists, 10% of internists got way out in front in terms of the electronic medical records, were more tech-savvy than their colleagues, embraced it versus fought it. Were you one of those internists that just sort of found it very interesting and then gravitated more and more towards it?
You know, it had a lot to do with wanting to have data at your fingertips. I was fortunate enough to grow up at the right time and with a family who had means and access to technology as I was going through, you know, high school, college, and into medical school. You know, one of the most common things that would happen when you got to the floors when you were trainee would be you get grilled by your upper class instructors, your the professors, you know, the community docs. And I found that I couldn't do a good job keeping track of all of my patients and all the data on note cards. So I got a laptop and I created a small little database, nothing really more sophisticated than an Excel file, because I wanted to always have all the information on my patients right there if somebody started grilling me.
And so then at what point did you transition from practicing, or maybe you still practice, to really serving in the role of CIO? At what point did you make that transition?
Yeah, you know, that was it's probably about halfway through my career. You might say that when I started out, I was like 95% clinical and 5% technical. You know, as soon as the medical school and the hospitals became aware that I was even interested in technology, you know, they started inviting me to be parts of their committees, making part of their selection groups, et cetera, and kept asking me to do more and more as time went on. And I saw the opportunities to that. So I would slowly transition my activities from being clinical to being more administrative. So about, oh golly, scary to say, but 20 years ago, I took on a role as a chief medical information officer for the Hennepin County Medical Center up in Minneapolis. And that was the point where I pivoted. I kind of switched from about 30% clinical to about 30% technology and 70% clinical to flipping that. That role continued to grow, and now I've been a full-time chief information officer here at Hospital Sisters Health System for the last 7 years.
Fascinating. I do want to ask you a couple of serious questions. First, I'm going to start with a different one. The first question is, if you have to rank the cities of Carbondale, Springfield, Kankakee, Bourbon A, or Libertyville, where do you come out?
Oh, Libertyville. That's where I graduated from high school up there. So that's where my foundation is. I still have a ton of good friends that come out of there. But you know, this is my second stint here in Springfield. So there's a lot to offer here and right in the center of the heartland as well.
Oh, magnificent. I went to Champaign, so I am familiar with the geography and live not very far from Milwaukee Avenue and Libertyville, so totally familiar.
I can get anywhere I need to be very quickly from here.
I bet. So let me ask you now a serious question. As CIO, what do you view as sort of the biggest priorities today? What are the three or so biggest priorities in what you do today?
You know, it's really sad, Scott. The biggest priority I have right now is security. Unfortunately, it just drives me absolutely batty. The amount of time and energy and financial resources that I have to put into protecting the healthcare information from people who are just malicious. And that really is unfortunate because it's siphoning away resources that really should be invested into other areas.
Let me ask you a question on that. Malicious actors, do you spend a lot of time thinking? I know you spent so much time thinking about between what people do on in the health system and between information technology tools trying to secure the network and stay mm-hmm. safe. Do you spend time at all thinking about who are these malicious actors? I mean, do people talk about who the malicious actors are? They state actors? Are they sort of like call centers, but not call centers, like hubs of people in cubicles doing this? Who is doing the hacking? Who are these malicious people?
Well, you know, I think it's a little bit of all of the above. I mean, we actually joked a little bit because some of these folks that were, you know, doing the encryption programming and hijacking of systems, they had better call centers than some regular bricks and mortar facilities and online facilities, because they wanted to make sure that your experience with dealing with them was as good as it could be, and, you know, increase the likelihood that you'd actually pay that fee in order to the ransom to get your data back. I'm fortunate we don't see a lot of really bad attacks, and I'd like to keep it that way. But clearly, you know, other than money, I'm not sure what these perpetrators hope to really get from healthcare.
And then, in addition to cybersecurity, where are the couple other big priorities that you work on?
Yeah, you know, I think really the area where I'm starting to spend a lot of thought is this transition. We're still very hospital focused. So on one hand, we've got a big pivot to making sure that our ambulatory infrastructure and services is in place. But at the same time, we also have to make that big leap that everybody else does. And that is to say that we're going to be doing a lot more virtual care. We're going to be needing to provide an infrastructure that allows patients and consumers to be doing a lot more self-service healthcare. And what we really need to do is make sure that we are adequately positioned to be able to deliver those needs as our patients and consumers want them.
Thank you. And then in terms of trying to make care easier for patients, they can do their own care, they can schedule their own stuff, it makes it a lot easier when they access the system, like they access some of the other consumer portals and so forth, that being a core goal, and just greater digital improvement, greater outpatient work. Talk for a moment about this question. In certain systems, I mean, a vendor will say, if you add on our application, our software, our application, it will be very easy on the IT team. There will be no lift from the IT team, no burden. and it'll work seamlessly. Is that ever the case? Or how do you manage how many applications are running in your system? You were a physician, practicing physician at one time. You come and say, I want this new app. It should be easy to add on. The vendor says it's easy to add on. Now you sit on the other side of that. How do you manage how many applications, software and service programs are running on your system? How do you look at that and rationalize and then manage it?
Yeah, you know, a lot packed into that question, Scott. You know, challenge is that the person's selling and the person's implementing are never the same part of the company that's approaching you. And so sometimes I don't know whether the sales guys actually know what it takes to make some of the products that they're offering work. And so the answer to the question is it's never that there's zero lift, but there are a lot of things that are really not that problematic in order to get an integration done. On the flip side, there are many applications and services and things we want to deliver that are going to require a tremendous amount of investment. It might not just be the integration itself, but the testing associated with ensuring that the data that is flowing properly and timely and is not in any way compromised can take quite a bit of time to get that right. You know, the second part of your question about, you know, what's the right number, we all know that there is no magic answer to that question. I mean, it's, you know, you kind of teed this up for me earlier, and I thought, well, 42 is the ideal number of applications for you know, most organizations. And most of us, you know, really struggle with that. Probably the right answer is however many you have is too many. You should always be thinking about how do we reduce the number and complexity of the applications in our portfolio. Go ahead.
How many hospitals around does HSHS have today?
Today we have 15.
15, okay. And so do each of the hospitals, does all the applications and software as a service, are all 15 on the same enterprise programs? Are things very much individualized per hospital, or is the system run information as more of a whole system?
You know, we've transitioned. So the answer right now is that we really run the majority of our applications kind of as a core for the system. And we have a lot of SaaS-based applications that we lease, as well as we, you know, essentially our data center is a SaaS for each of our hospitals. We have acquired new hospitals over time, and it takes a while to get them to transition. So no, not all 15 of our hospitals are running identical portfolios of applications, but we do in fact have strategies in place and projects and timelines laid out to get each of those facilities onto our core infrastructure. In many cases, they may have contracts of departmental or ancillary applications that really it's not worth our effort to try and work our way out of those contracts. And so we'll let them just expire and use those opportunities as the right time to bring that hospital and its application portfolio back into the fold with the rest of the organization.
So 15 hospitals, do you have a guesstimate as to how many applications in total? I know there's 5 to 10 enterprise programs, but how many applications are running in total in a system? I don't need an exact number, but do you have a guesstimate as to what that number looks like for 15 hospitals?
Yeah, we've done some consultative work here over the last 2 years, and we've been using about 675 applications.
Got it. And then is there some sense of like the use pendulum of those? Is that a bell curve as to how much they're all used? Like there's a handful that are used by a lot of people. There are a handful that are used by almost nobody. And is that how it looks? Is that typical?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we've got our core tier one applications, right? So our clinical and EHR, that's used by every nurse in the organization. And, you know, now because a lot of the COVID response and how a lot of us administratively are chipping in, a lot of us are using those core applications, right? Our you know, HR application, everybody touches that. You know, everybody's, you know, doing their time and their information, getting ready to do their taxes, all of that information is in there. You know, so there's probably 15 applications that serve the needs of the majority of our individuals, and then it drops off. So it's probably not a bell curve. It's probably more a linear. It's probably more a line if I thought about it, Scott. You know, and then there are a ton of people that just use, you know, a very limited number of applications as well. But one of the things you want to consider about that is I really don't care what they want to standardize on. So if I've got three different hospitals each doing kind of marketing and needing some sort of drawing and software or image manipulation software. I don't care whether they use Photoshop or whether they use Corel or whether they use GIMP. I mean, it doesn't cost me anything to support them. I just have to install it on their computer when they need it. So those all count towards that.
Think in terms of, so it's more like a long tail, what Google used to call a long tail, or what Sperno is a long tail, than it is a bell curve. That's actually really interesting. And then do you ever think about, like, do you think in terms of every app that's added on increases your security risk so that you just another place to manage security risk, or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there are certain applications that are greater risks than others. None of us expected SolarWinds was going to be the vector for what impacted our organization here most recently. I'm not really worried about somebody's individual piece of software, like I just mentioned, becoming a problem, especially if it's my team that's taking care of the actual installation process. And then we've got, we really try and make the appropriate investments in the tools at the corporate level that are doing the monitoring for every individual device across the network. I mean, just like everybody else, we worry about the devices that are kind of the clinical engineering or those devices that kind of have some sort of FDA oversight, because the synchronization of the risk and how quickly we can update those devices is always challenging.
Another question. A department in Hospital 14 decides they want to add something on. Is there a process where they can do it at their local hospital? Or does it somehow or another have to come through your office just to make sure the installation is clean, the security risks are reduced? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, it's not perfect. And if anybody's got it perfect, I'd love to hear from them. For the most part, all of those types of purchases require contracting. And so there are a series of questions that every single contract that gets signed in the organization, people need to go through, and there are ticklers for whether or not IT needs to review those. And I would say that works the majority of the time. Every once in a while, it doesn't. Let me ask you a question about that.
If you went back 7 to 10 years, you might have a local hospital giving you more pushback about process, more of a fight about process. But now I take it in today's cybersecurity world, everybody understands that this is how it is. Is that a fair statement?
Well, they don't understand. I mean, they don't understand it because they still want the autonomy that they've had in the past. But we just can't give it to them. And we have to put things through a much tighter ringer than we have had in the past, because everything is linked together. It's another portal or access point into the organization. Just the organizational risk associated with those new additions and whether or not those vendors can appropriately indemnify ourselves from the risk that their software brings into the organization is an ongoing exercise that we have to go through. And it's getting harder.
And the indemnity cost would be so high anyway, so it's probably even more important that you feel confident in the vendor, that the vendor's got great security systems.
Say that again. I'm not sure I followed that.
The point is, if a hospital has a really bad outcome, particularly a big hospital, to the cyber risk of one of their vendors, that comes from one of their vendors, that vendor might not be able to survive the indemnity claims. So even
Correct.
If there's indemnity, more important is that you have a vendor that itself has got the right protections in place to do things right from a cybersecurity standpoint. Yeah, at least
Correct.
It's important.
Yeah, I mean, it has a lot to do with the expectations that we put on them. We are looking for what the levels of insurance that they have. And you're right. I mean, if they're a sizable vendor with 100 healthcare customers and they suffer a breach, they're more likely to go under than anything else. They're just going to get buried under the cost of trying to recover from that breach.
No, that's exactly right. Dr. Gensinger, what a pleasure to visit with you. I want to thank you for joining us on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I got a chance to learn a lot. I know our audience will enjoy it a ton. And thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. And I always enjoy talking to you guys.